happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
In a fog there somewhere. There you are. Hey. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Ann. Nice to see you. We're back in the studio.
I'm Ann Northrup. Yes.
How are you doing?
Well, I decided last week that, in fact, I was a little exhausted and under the weather, and I thought, you know, maybe I've been pushing this hard. Maybe I've been expecting to feel better faster, and maybe I ought to just take it easy a little. I haven't been taking it easy, but I've lowered my expectations. Okay. However, I'm going to raise my chair.
Okay.
Unless you could lower yours a little.
I can lower mine.
Let's
a little
do
bit.
That.
Let's do that.
Because you're a little higher,
well,
and
actually,
we like to
maybe
be.
I can't lower this chair.
Try the other side.
I'm trying the other side. Oh, there we go.
Better. Okay. Well,
you're telling a gay man to try the other side? All right, let's get to the news. You know, our guest in a few moments is going to be veteran lesbian activist and author Sarah Schulman on her new book, The Fantasy and Necessity of Solidarity.
It's a very provocative and interesting book, and we'll spend some time talking to her and then do the news. We'll do a little news first, such as the Trump Supreme Court, which allowed states, you may remember, to ban gender-affirming care for teens, is now poised to stop the states from banning the murderous practice of conversion therapy.
Just disgusting.
We'll try to sort that out.
The Trump racist anti-LGBTQ extortion racket extends to more universities, but Governor Gavin Newsom is striking back.
He really thinks he can be the king of everything, doesn't
well,
he?
You know.
Catholic schools in Colorado lost their court fight to receive state funds and discriminate against LGBTQ families at the same time.
Let's hope that doesn't go to the Supreme Court. The GOP candidate for governor in Virginia, who's way behind in the polls, is trying to win now on anti-trans bigotry. And there was more trouble for the gay Republican nominee for lieutenant governor and the Democratic nominee for attorney general. What a mess in Virginia.
Completely. Everywhere. Speaking of messes, CBS News, one of my old homes, names Barry Weiss, not Barry White, Barry Weiss, as the right-wing, actually, she calls herself a lesbian, I think.
She was married to a man at one time.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
She's married to a woman now. But she's a non-reporter, certainly no experience in broadcast news. And she is a Trump supporter and a transphobe. And CBS has named her their editor-in-chief.
In Rochester, the remains of a gay man who was murdered and missing since 2011 have been identified.
And a man plagued by delusions that LGBTQ terrorists were after him committed a mass shooting in North Carolina.
And the Archbishop of Canterbury is going to be a woman for the first time.
Okay.
Doesn't solve all our LGBTQ problems, but it is some progress.
So the big news today as we tape on Wednesday is the oral arguments before the Supreme Court of the United States on Colorado's ban on conversion therapy. The Alliance Defending Freedom drummed up a plaintiff who's never been challenged on her practice of conversion therapy.
She doesn't do it. She's afraid to do it. So she wants the court to say, you can do it. It's talk therapy. You can do it.
This is a woman
it's
named
free speech.
This a woman named Kaylee Childs. She is a therapist.
Well, here's the thing. Let's understand this. She can say whatever she wants. She can do Christian counseling, and she can say this, but she wants insurance reimbursement. As a practitioner, as a professional practitioner, and all the professional associations say, it's totally unethical and wrong to do this. but she wants to be reimbursed for her bigotry.
Well, this is basically a case that breaks down to so-called free speech versus consumer protection, because, of course, all of these professional societies and we and others would say that to try to practice conversion therapy is malpractice and is harming the client. And therefore, it is okay to outlaw it. It's currently outlawed in 24 states and the District of Columbia.
Now, we have lots of evidence of the harm of it. Lots of testimony from young people, especially, who have been terribly harmed by it or took their own lives because of it.
Yes.
And but that was not, I mean, the other side, Lions Defending Freedom, oh, there's no evidence that does any harm. Nothing was presented.
And how dare you? You know, these poor young people come to us saying, please change me, change me. How dare you prevent us from doing that for them? How about saying to them, well, let's talk about what is really right for you, and maybe we'll reach a conclusion that is healthy, rather than, okay, let's change you. Let's do a little aversion therapy. Let's electrocute you. See how that works.
Terrible.
So we're not expecting a favorable opinion based on our knowledge of the right wing, which controls the Supreme Court now, and based on the oral arguments at the court this week.
But this is the court that said, oh, we're not qualified to rule on gender-affirming care. Let the states just decide about it, what they want to do about it. We're not equipped.
Or abortion.
But when the states say, you know, we want to ban a harmful practice, the Supreme Court says, oh, no. You know, you're not aligning with anti-gay bigotry, which is what they have.
So did you want to say something?
Go ahead.
So this is a good way to define the fight that's going on these days. And we wanted to talk to our friend and very prominent and much honored author, Sarah Schulman, who has been involved in many fights over the last many years and is the brilliant creator of the ACT UP Oral History Project. Highly recommend you delve into that, even though I argued against it at the beginning. Whatever. But we brought her in here a couple of days ago. She has a new book out, and we read the book and were fascinated by it, so we thought you would be fascinated to hear from her and hear about the book.
Welcome to another edition of What the Hell Do We Do Now? Our guest, we're honored to have, Sarah Schulman. Sarah has had a freedom vision since she was 3 years old, fighting for, against the war in Vietnam, for the civil rights movement, the fight for reproductive rights, the LGBTQ movement, including co-founding the Lesbian Avengers, the AIDS movement, and a longtime fighter for Palestinian rights and justice. She's a distinguished English professor for many decades at the College of Staten Island and now Northwestern, a prolific dramatist, and the author of award-winning fiction and nonfiction, including Let the Record Show, A Political History of the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, New York, based on interviews conducted for the ACT UP Oral History Project that she ran with Jim Hubbard, interviewing 188 surviving members of ACT UP over 18 years. We welcome her here to talk about her new book, The Fantasy and Necessity of Solidarity. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
We're delighted to have you return to Gay USA. This is a fascinating book and raises all sorts of questions, which we want to delve into. But one of the things you say in the book is that your life is now organized around solidarity with the people of Gaza. You've gotten death threats and suffered professional losses because of that. Do you feel like the world is finally catching up with you with all the discussion of Gaza?
Well, what's amazing is that the people of the world are profoundly opposed to the murders and the starvation in Gaza. And, you know, you're seeing millions and millions of people in the streets in every country in the world. The problem is the ruling class. They are obstructing everything from moving forward. But I don't remember a time when so many people all around the world were so united in one vision.
Well, that takes me back to Vietnam. But it is the ruling class that's the problem. It is the hierarchy. It is people with power that we have evidently given them or they have grabbed. And I am astonished that you can have billions of people in the world agreeing against this kind of genocide or murder, at least. And yet the people in power just go merrily along. How do you understand that equation?
Well, we're in the middle of a fascist cataclysm. And as far as U.S. support for Israel, Biden was just as guilty as Trump. You know, every time we give $1 billion to Israel, that's public money. That's our tax money. It should have been spent on health, education, and the arts. And instead, we give this money, and Israel then buys weapons from the U.S. munitions industry.
Right.
So it's a big money laundering thing, and the collateral are Palestinian lives.
Built on an understanding created 80 years ago that we need this outpost in the Middle East. They're our only friends. We must support them or the world will collapse.
Well, you know, the history of Zionism, you know, Jewish people, we say that we're 5,768 years old. But Zionism really came into being only at the end of the 1800s. And the British, when the Ottoman Empire collapsed, they wanted to get a colonial peace. And the Palestine Mandate fit their agenda. And also, it was popular because it was a way of getting Jews out of England. So it also fit an anti-Semitic agenda.
And they're talking about putting Tony Blair in charge of Gaza.
Yes.
And I heard a commentator, a woman on the news, say, I guess Satan wasn't available. Now, look, you talked about the fascist period that we're in. You know, we're talking this week about the Trump attack on higher education. I mean, it's intensified. It started a while ago, demanding that these institutions bend to his will or be denied federal funding, demanding professors lose their free speech rights. The only thing you're going to be allowed to talk about is stuff on campus. And you've been through this before a couple of times at the City University of New York and at Northwestern, where you were basically subjected to an inquisition. How do you feel now, and how do you see it playing out?
There's a lot of resistance, mostly from faculty. And there's a lot of pressure by the government on the administration. So it's a battle between faculty and the administration about whether or not these institutions are going to oppose the government and stand up to them, or whether they're going to continue on this path of appeasement, which those of us who remember Neville Chamberlain know, appeasement never works.
But they are, when you oppose the faculty and the government with the administration of the schools in the middle, the administration has rarely in this age of the fascist cataclysm stood up for the faculty or the people on campus.
Well, it's because in recent decades, these elite private schools have become very top heavy, with boards that are mostly business people. They're not educators, and they don't have educational visions for their schools. They're really hedge funds, or as Lisa Dugan says about NYU, it's a real estate company that offers classes. You know, and they're only interested in protecting their endowment.
Yes.
And the faculty are like these annoying, you know, bees that they want to wipe away. But people aren't going away. And the most important thing for us all is to try to maintain some kind of internal coherence. Because in this era, our integrity is really the only thing we can control.
Well, right. In your book, you know, you say the fantasy is that it will not cost to be in solidarity with the oppressed. But of course, now people in solidarity are learning that there's a crackdown if you stand up for transgender people, immigrants, and Palestinians.
Yes, there is a cost to solidarity. However, we know what the cost is if we do nothing. That's clear. I mean, it's interesting because I've been out there going around America with this book. I did 20 cities in the spring, and I'm doing 8 cities right now. And there's a lot of decent people out there. And there are new indie bookstores everywhere in all kinds of cities because people want to get together. They want to be in real life, and they want to talk. And they're very committed on a grassroots level to opposing the government. I'm living in the occupied city of Chicago right now.
Tragic.
And People are stopping their cars and jumping out of their cars to scream at ICE people. I mean, they are just, it's face-to-face opposition and confrontation.
Well, this is very reminiscent of the Vietnam War. As the oldest person here, I'll take a little rank there, although you're both close behind me. But it was achieving a critical mass of people willing to come out in the streets and object and throw away draft cards or burn them or just resist on some very personal and confrontational level. But I see this administration in particular as far more vicious than I look back on the Nixon administration with nostalgia compared to these people.
Right.
Not if you were Cambodian.
Well, of course. And we were on strike when I graduated from college because of all of that. But I really, I am somewhat terrified at what these people are willing to say and do.
Well, I will say that I think that students are the most moral social milieu of our country right now.
Okay.
And they are resisting on all levels. And it's very interesting to watch people at very prestigious schools like Harvard, you know, to have the valedictorian give her speech against the killing in Gaza and then have her diploma taken away. Or Columbia expelling 80 students, including people who had previously graduated, and revoking their diploma. They're taking the best trained, most talented students, the most highly achieved students, and they're alienating them from these institutions. And the students are smart, and they're realizing that what's being exposed is that these hierarchies are false. And they're going to go on and do great things.
So these schools have become very very dependent on federal money for research and also dependent on corporate donations and things.
Yes, so, but they also have enormous endowments. I mean, Northwestern has $18 billion.
But it never seems to be enough for these schools.
Well, Princeton, on the other hand, has decided to sell their bonds and just say, you to the government. So there are schools that are not playing along.
Yeah, I just worry that we're not going to get active enough in time. I see you talk about Chicago, the raid on that apartment building this week with the ICE people rappelling out of helicopters, dragging every single resident out into the street. The way they are physically attacking people just strictly on assumptions about race. And
yes, we're in the middle of a cataclysm and there's no easy out.
Yeah.
But there's a few things that I do want to say that I think are hopeful.
Go.
The first thing is that the purpose of this book is to make solidarity more doable. And my approach is to try to strip away any sense of heroism or perfectionism, because I think that those things keep people from being active.
Exactly.
And if instead we can understand solidarity as a process of making mistakes, self-correcting, and trying again, because we're building infrastructure for the future. So as I've been going around the country, I've been saying to people, please, if there's any pre-existing organization that you can stand, join it. And if you hate everybody, get together with three people once a week and read the newspaper and discuss it, because we need to rebuild relationships. Because between COVID and the internet, people are lonely and they're not connected. And that's why there's so many new bookstores, because people want to be together.
Well, you also write that when people are being marginalized and brutalized, that the responsibility is to intervene. Even if you do not like them, solidarity does not require love.
That's right. That's right.
And you also say inequalities and conflicts make collaboration difficult.
Well, you know, one of my biggest lessons I learned from ACT UP, where I met you, Anne. Because as you know, I'm a historian of ACT UP New York.
You sure are.
And I know quite a bit
about
it.
Over my objections.
Yes. And one of our goals in doing that study was to try to figure out why ACT UP was so effective. And my takeaway is because people could disagree. There was an organic structure in which if you had an idea and I thought it was terrible, I might yell and scream at you a little. But in the end, I wouldn't stop you from doing your idea. I just wouldn't do it.
Well, and
then I would go do my idea.
And we didn't hate each other for that.
Right.
It was we could accept the fact that everybody had their own ideas and their own way of operating.
Well, this is the lesson, because radical democracy is really about the acceptance of difference with the bottom line. And now that every community in this country is under attack, the idea that you can only work with people who agree with you on everything is an impossibility.
Absolutely.
So I'm seeing a lot more flexibility where people are understanding that they need to work when there's agreement and walk away when there's not. For example, the Catholic Church, one of your favorite subjects, Andy. You know, we have this new pope, and he's terrible on gay people, and he's terrible on abortion, but he's great on immigration. And the Catholic Church is going into the courts in cities to fight for immigrant rights, and we should stand with them when they do that,
absolutely,
even if we don't agree with the rest of their
agenda. And the pope actually said that this week about abortion when he was asked about it. He's, you know, about denying communion to people who support abortion. And he said, well, you want to be pro-life, you got to be pro-immigrant, and you know, you've got to be against the death penalty, he said. The pope, this week.
Right, so, but abortion rights is pro-life, women's lives.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, of course.
He's still locked into that
rhetoric. Of course.
But I want to go back to one thing you said about the heroicization of activists, because I get approached by people on a regular basis who say, oh, you know, you and ACT UP, and I say, I'm just a regular person. Don't put me in that category, because that's going to stop you from doing stuff. And really, cut it out. You have to know that everybody is capable of doing this activism in one way or another.
True, but some things that I think are helpful for people is make demands that are winnable.
Sure.
One of the mistakes of the left is that we do something, it doesn't work, and then we do it again exactly the same way. Okay, if it doesn't work, don't do it again.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right. So demands that are winnable. And then actions that are tied to demands, which is what a campaign is. So you're not just getting all these people together to march around in the rain and listen to people say things they already know.
Oh, please.
And then go home. That doesn't help us. You know, to have these dynamic, connected plan, that's how we move forward.
Right. We all turn out for these demonstrations and hold up our signs, but there has to be something more that goes on.
And it doesn't take a lot of people to do that.
No, it doesn't. And also, your demands can be local.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it must be begin with.
And we are running out of time, but I want to say there's so much that's rich in this book because you really tell your stories of going through these things. And actually, apparently, the entertainment world is a lot harder to handle than the political world. But you do conclude, don't stop doing what you think is right. Make them stop you.
That's right.
Yeah, but it is. Andy's right. There is so much in here, and I'm sorry we're only doing 15 minutes, and perhaps you'll come back and continue to tell us tales from the book tour.
Thank you. If you're around this weekend, you are starring in a film called Jason and Shirley Revisited at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Tell me the date again.
It's on Friday at 7 o'clock, directed by Stephen Winter.
At the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
That's right. Okay.
And it's all about,
Well, I play the filmmaker Shirley Clark, who made a very famous film in the 60s called Portrait of Jason. It was the first film about a black gay man.
Right.
And Stephen Winter, who is a black gay man, made an answer film. And I think it opens a lot of doors.
And we will link to this in our email.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. And congratulations on 30 years of Gay USA.
The book is The Fantasy and Necessity of Solidarity by Sarah Schulman. We'll give you more information about that in our weekly email, too. Back to the news. Well, I love Sarah, and I'm glad she wrote this book because it's really meaty and valuable.
Right. And following up on the whole business of cracking down on higher education,
I mean,
this is completely heinous, and we talked about it in the interview. But that was all written by a guy named Mark Rowan, who's a billionaire financier, who went after the head of the University of Pennsylvania successfully. And Gavin Newsom is saying, if any of the California colleges sign this compact that they're going to deny all this free speech, you're going to lose all your state funding.
Yeah, that's a nice comeback. It's almost like the administration has watched college students get angrier and angrier, and they say, all right, so we'll offer you something good. We will, if you sign the pledge to freeze tuition, wouldn't you like that, and have fewer international students, that's not so great, and refer only to man-woman people,
Yes, right. That's pure fascism.
We'll give you all sorts of lovely perks, which we are not delineating yet. We also want you to have no words or actions against conservative ideas.
Right.
Crazy.
Yes.
And yes, Governor Newsom will cut California state funding.
Trump is out of control. We have a picture of this. He's now calling Democrats the party of hate, evil, and Satan. I mean, this kind of stuff, I mean, you know, and then they complain about polarization in the United States.
Well, they're nothing if not hypocrites, but they escalate every day. And he is beginning to look a little demented. I am buying into that now. It turns out, this is the story I found most shocking this week. His aides have been showing him video of riots in Portland, Oregon 5 years ago.
Right.
And saying, this is what's going on now. Send in the National Guard. And he's buying it. Or pretending to buy it. And he didn't know that. Why can't I read my own handwriting? Health insurance subsidies were expiring for millions of people under the new bill. And he didn't know that the Department of Homeland Security had cut funding for New York City counterterrorism efforts.
He put that back.
When he found out about it.
But he's not doing anything about the subsidies. All right. Okay. Then there's Kash Patel. This week fired a longtime bureau employee for simply, at some point in his career, he had a pride flag at his workspace thing.
During the Biden administration.
This is now a punishable offense. They say people are now taking down pictures of their partners and things. So, I mean, you know, come on. You know, and, you know, look at Kash Patel. Where's the picture? He wears a symbol of his Hindu faith there. On his arm, is that, you know, I mean, that's taking a stand. And wait till we get to, what's his name?
Hegseth.
Hegseth.
Someone described all this as the Lavender Scare 2, because, in fact, they are witch hunting LGBTQ people in the federal workforce,
right.
The military, all of these agencies.
They're going after black soldiers.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Come on.
Yeah.
And then there is Hegseth, who flaunts his Christian, you know, these are Christian nationalist symbols. That the thing there on his arm that says Deus, what is it?
Vault?
Yeah. Where is it? Where
God
does it?
Rules?
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Yeah. Oh, it means God wills it. I mean, again, this is the way he presents himself. Of course, everybody else has to, you know, shape up. You know, he kicked off the first edition of his workday prayer service in May. Now, again, they do have prayer services within the Pentagon and things like that.
And Congress.
But this was live streamed to the world. And, you know, and there's all these people, you know, come on.
The National Park Service, meanwhile, restored grants for historic underrepresented communities, not including LGBTQ. But they've snuck them back in for others. We'll see how long that lasts.
This was the week that rumors ran rampant that Speaker Mike Johnson was active on Grindr, including some of these rumors passed along by former New York Times columnist Charles Blow from his Louisiana sources. All I have to say is we don't want him.
No, we don't. There's a long list. In addition to this college compact, the Department of Education and right-wing organizations have created something called the Civics Education Coalition that is God-centered, that they are going to be offering to secondary schools.
Who's in this coalition? It's strictly right-wing political groups. Heritage Foundation, that gave us Project 2025, Moms for Liberty, Alliance Defending Freedom, which is defined as a hate group by, you know, and this is who is going to be dictating civics education.
Well, the Alliance Defending Freedom we cite about three times a week. And today it's because they brought the case to the Supreme Court upholding conversion therapy.
Well, don't get too depressed. At the Kennedy Center, a source says that the near full houses at the National Symphony Orchestra concerts are a deception. Apparently, instead of just giving the members of the orchestra two tickets for, you know, they gave them six tickets so that they could paper the house.
Department of Education and Health and Human Services are threatening the state of Minnesota for its laws welcoming trans athletes into participation in the state. They're ready to withdraw all federal funding because of that.
We have some chances to turn some things around. In November, the LGBTQ Victory Fund has endorsed more than 280 candidates for state and local offices. To see who is endorsed in your area, go to victoryfund.org and then go to where they list the candidates. You can plug in your location, and they'll tell you if any of us are running.
New Jersey hospitals are ending gender-affirming care for those under 19 years old. They've been threatened with a loss of federal funds if they don't. Now, offering gender-affirming care to youth is not illegal. We told you a few minutes ago, the Supreme Court says you can outlaw gender-affirming care, but you don't have to, much with abortion rights. But the administration is threatening these hospitals, even though they're not doing anything illegal.
Well, a lot of New York hospitals cut it back in February.
Exactly.
When Trump came
It's not illegal to offer it. And it's, of course, getting caught up in the New Jersey governor's election.
Well, let's go to the other big election this year, which is in Virginia. So the lieutenant governor is running for Winsome Earle Sears. She's losing by about 10 points. That's her there on the left against Abigail Spanberger. And so now she's just trying to run anti-trans ads. Same guy, the guy in New Jersey is also doing
yep.
this against his opponent.
Yep.
But it doesn't seem to be working. On the other hand,
You know, I hope not. But you know what happens in the last couple of weeks of an election when you're running such a hateful scare campaign, you can end up picking up a lot of votes.
We'll see how whatever people are.
Yeah.
But in Virginia, you know, we told you that they have an out gay candidate for lieutenant governor, and he was in some trouble because he was on some gay porn blogs and things like this.
He's the Republican candidate.
John Reed, and governor said, don't run, you know, blah, 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 John Reed. So now they've come out with what was on these blogs, and apparently it was some pretty hot and heavy stuff, Nazi stuff. I can't even say some of these words that were on there. But it had a lot of neo-Nazi stuff, and now they're really saying it. All right, so he's in trouble. He's probably not going to win anyway. But then there's the attorney general's race,
where the Democratic candidate is in trouble because he, it turns out, a couple of years ago was publishing very violent, threatening tweets. And
wasn't it just a text to somebody else?
Could have been.
Yeah.
He apologized
for it. It was a text message to somebody.
Yeah.
And he's talking to this guy, and he says, listen, if I just had a couple of bullets left and it was up to whether I'm going to go for Hitler or Pol Pot or the Speaker, Republican Speaker of the House, I'd give both of them to the Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Well, that's a little extreme. You shouldn't be putting anything like that on an electronic device, you idiot.
I must say that I've become more self-conscious about...
Yes, you should be.
And I don't tweet, but just sending messages, I don't want to... Because I tend to exaggerate and hyperbolize, and I've just given myself a little talking to cut that out.
All right. And speaking of cutting out, in Miami, we got a little video of this. We can run the B-roll. Miami they are actually digging up rainbow bricks on the street. I mean, this is a massive operation to kill the gay.
It's a lovely Art Deco design of this crosswalk, and they're just going right after it. This is what a metaphor for what they want to do to us.
Yes, indeed, and it's very disturbing. Let's talk about that Barry Weiss. This is B-A-R-I Weiss. You know, you've read that the CBS News has moved to the right, and they've appointed this woman, who is married to a woman, to be their...
She used to work at the New York Times and other places. She...
As a columnist. She's never been a reporter. Yeah. Now she's in charge
and
of CBS News.
And when she was at the Times, she was getting attacked as too pro-Israel, and she finally walked out. She quit because she felt she was being mistreated. So then she started her own publication called The Free Press, along with her wife.
With a lot of right-wing money.
Mostly her wife's. as a Pitney Bowes heiress. And so they've been running the free press, and it's the same old right-wing stuff.
She was given $500,000 by billionaire Republican donor Harlan Crow, the funder of Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court, to help launch an anti-woke nonprofit organization that they end up calling the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. But, of course, it's very anti-trans. By the way, she was addressing the Federalist Society, Barry Weiss, and she said, I know there are some people in this room who don't believe that my marriage should have been legal, and that's okay, because we're all Americans who want lower taxes.
So Paramount, which now owns CBS, bought out the free press from her for $150 million and made her the editor-in-chief of CBS News.
And this is all about appeasing Trump.
Yes, absolutely.
Because they've got a deal on the table.
For billions of dollars.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it makes me glad I quit CBS News 40 years ago. Yes. 38 years ago.
It's depressing.
Very.
We'll see how 60 Minutes reacts to this. All right. How about some positive news?
Okay.
In Colorado, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit ruled in favor of the Colorado Department of Early Childhood that they were sued over whether the state can deny funding to Catholic preschools that want to discriminate against LGBTQ parents. They said this is a neutral law. If you want government money, you've got to comply with the anti-discrimination laws. And we have plenty of religious organizations that do, and we encourage them to participate. But you're saying we won't, and that would violate well, fine, go off and do your thing.
This is the opposite, interestingly, of the cake decision, because the Masterpiece Cake and other organizations that claim a religious exemption from non-discrimination laws have been winning most of their cases. And now the Colorado court has said, no, the anti-discrimination state law trumps your religious objections. And I fear that this will go higher up and the Supreme Court will reverse this.
Do what you want. Just don't pick my pocket. I mean, you know, this came to a head in Ireland a couple of years ago because all the public schools are run by the church. That's the way it was from the beginning in Ireland, which was a very Catholic country. And finally, the government said, if you don't start hiring gay people and treating them equally, we're going to set up a new system. So they said, okay.
That's what it comes down to, doesn't it? All right. Well, more good news from Maryland, where, you know, we have these debates over sex education and should it include LGBTQ issues or people. Well, someone did a survey of the issue in Maryland and found that out of 160,000 families surveyed on their opinion of the issue, a grand total of 43 had opted out of the LGBTQ-inclusive sex education.
On the other hand, in Kentucky, a federal court sided with a Christian photographer who challenged the non-discrimination provisions that she says would have forced her to work at same-sex weddings. So they went with her, and that's certainly where the Supreme Court would go.
Well, speaking of photojournalists, New York City, Alexa Wilkinson, who is a longstanding and well-known photojournalist, there she is on the right, tagged along with a group that was pouring red paint or dye or whatever on the front of the New York Times, claiming that they are too pro-Israel. And she just was taking pictures. Excuse me, I believe it's they, them.
And they're being accused of a hate crime.
Yes.
For this. Now, look, we all better watch ourselves when we're covering these. I go to these demonstrations, take a lot of pictures. Now I'm going to be held responsible for whatever they do.
We'll see.
Even though I'm highly sympathetic to the causes.
Yeah, well, here's an old chestnut. A couple of Democratic representatives in Ohio have introduced a bill that forbids straight men from having unprotected sex without a plan for
having a child, I think.
Baby, yes.
Yeah.
It's been tried before. No one takes it seriously.
They don't get it. the Stonewall National Museum in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, there, it's been around since 1973. They have a big budget shortfall. They lost all their federal money, of course, and, of course, all their state money because of Ron DeSantis. So, and of course, they're losing a lot of corporate money as well. But they're trying to stay afloat, and they're working on it. But it's a struggle.
The Wisconsin teacher Melissa Temple, who wanted to play the Dolly Parton Miley Cyrus collaboration song "Rainbow Land" at a school performance, has been fired. The district had banned it. Parents, however, reacted and got up in arms. But the court said that the teacher had provoked a disruption and therefore was legitimately fired.
Oh.
Provoked a disruption.
Wow.
She provoked a disruption.
Well, Sean Diddy Combs provoked a lot of stuff, and it was encouraging to hear the judge, when I was listening to it, overrule defense objections to describing his paid male escorts as victims. The judge said evidence established they were transported for the purpose of engaging in commercial sex acts. But don't worry, Sean, you're going to get a pardon from President Trump.
You and Ghislaine Maxwell. All right. Bad actors on planes and elsewhere.
Okay. We'll go to that.
In North Carolina, an ex-Marine, probably affected by his service, had been ranting about LGBTQ people coming after him, and we were all pedophiles. And so he got...
We were going to traffic him.
So he gets on a boat and goes up a river near... a bar. Was it? It must have been a gay bar. Was it?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Anyway, his ranting was all about LGBTQ people, and so he shot up the bar and killed a couple of people.
It was a waterfront bar.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: if you watch Fox News, not this program, if you watch Fox News, you are being fed all this stuff all day long, relentlessly, and it gets into your system, especially if you're unbalanced.
And an unbalanced guy got on a flight from Minnesota to Newark, a Sun Country flight, and he started screaming and yelling and acting out and saying,
"I'm being chased by gangs and radiated by the LGBTQ community, we were also causing him to develop cancer."
And the plane is going down. At that point, they took the plane down to Chicago to get rid of him. But he was completely out of control.
In Rochester, the remains of a gay chef named Doh, D-O-H, Soh, S-O-H, who had been missing since 2011, were finally identified by the police. He was a Burmese refugee living there, sort of a beloved member of the community. But they didn't find these remains until 2021. He'd been missing since 2011. And then now they finally identified them, but they still don't know who killed him.
In Nassau County, New York, a court has upheld the county's ban on trans athletes.
That's a Trump judge. Yeah. So we'll see what happens when it goes up the line. All right. In international news,
yes.
A Moroccan court on Monday upheld a 30-month prison sentence for a feminist leader, woman named Lakhdar, over blasphemy charges because she put up a T-shirt saying Allah is a lesbian. This is being protested by Human Rights Watch as a huge blow to free speech. She posts that, the religious ideology is fascist, phallocentric, and misogynistic. Well, I guess that's a tough thing to say in Morocco.
Evidently. in China, they would have just changed what the T-shirt said. The censors took a gay couple in a movie called Together, and with AI, they changed one of the members of the gay male couple who were kissing. They made it a woman so that it would be a heterosexual couple kissing in the movie.
Just unbelievable.
Yep.
They have made a transformation at the Church of England. They've named Sarah Mullally, 63, is the first female Archbishop of Canterbury. She's the former chief nursing officer for England. She spent more than 35 years as a cancer nurse, and now she's going to be the 106th Archbishop of Canterbury and the first woman. She's married to a man, has two kids now. She says she's supportive of same-sex blessings, but she upholds the traditional teaching about marriage as a man and a woman. Same-sex couples can't get married in Church of England churches.
No, but she does support the partnerships. She's been the Bishop of London since 2018.
Whenever. Bishop
of
London.
63 years old. Congratulations to Sarah.
Yeah. There are still eight bishops who would not receive communion from the new archbishop the way it's constituted. And Japan's set to get its first female prime minister who...
Very right-wing.
Who is right-wing. But the government made some moves towards more partner recognition. It's not substantial.
Well, prefects or areas of Tokyo have legalized same-sex relationships. So,
but this is the legislature starting to move on it, even though they have this conservative government.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying for a while now there's been a trajectory.
Right.
What do you think of the art gallery in the UK that says Lord Horatio Nelson was gay?
I think, I had a boyfriend who said, you say it about everybody. sure, I mean, he died.
Why not?
Let me kiss you to the guy who was holding him. Let's get that out of the way. He was on his way to paradise.
We waited so long.
Lord Nelson. I don't think they'll take him off his pedestal in Trafalgar Square.
We celebrated this summer the huge Pride parade and event in Hungary, in Budapest. Well, now the fifth largest city of Hungary, PECS, I think, had 7,000 to 8,000 people show up at their Pride parade, making it seven times bigger than any previous event. They accomplished it because, the government of Hungary, Orban, was against the Budapest event. So the people in this smaller town registered for the event by describing it as a gathering against wild animal overpopulation. Maybe that's straight people.
Right. In the UK, the Labour Party's Liverpool conference was disrupted a bit by the Trans Plus Solidarity Alliance because the party is moving towards this whole, women are women, men are men thing, and keeping, trans women out of men's restrooms, all this kind of stuff. 650 UK corporations signed a letter opposing the proposals that require staff to act as gender police, with business leaders arguing it would breach privacy laws and create legal liability if we're supposed to go around and check everybody's genitals before they go into the restroom.
It's crazy. And I have to believe that this is all provoked by a minority of the population. People really don't care unless there's some huge incident, and then you do something about it.
Right.
In Vietnam, they canceled Pride events in most small towns, except Hanoi kept their Pride event.
All right?
Yep.
AIDS Health. DoxyPep seems to be having an effect. The CDC, remember them? They are reporting that...
The late lamented CDC?
That there were 2.2 million reported cases of STIs in 2024, which is 13% higher than 2015, but a decline of 9% since 2023. And they're crediting this DoxyPep, where you essentially take medicine, like penicillin, I guess it is.
Doxycycline, I would think.
Yeah, that's what it is, yes. And then that before sex or right after.
Within 3 days.
Or right after.
Yeah.
Within 72 hours of a sexual encounter.
That's 3 days.
And it reduces chances of acquiring chlamydia, syphilis, and gonorrhea. But the sooner that you take it, the better.
Sure. Unfortunately, we can give you this information, but maybe not the CDC webpage. They took down the CDC webpage that had to do with gay men and sexually transmitted infections.
They don't care if we die.
Care? They want.
Yes.
We're back to the HIV/AIDS epidemic.
Outrageous.
We'll kill you any way we can.
Entertainment. Ann and I went to see a show called Pen Pals. Now, this is two women appearing. They change casts every 2 weeks. We saw Kathleen Chalfant and Ella McLaughlin. And it's about they start off as girls in the 1950s as pen pals. Ellen is in Newark, and Kathleen is playing someone in England. And they exchange this letters for decades and about the ups and downs of their lives. I was kind of moved by it as somebody of those generations. It is running through October 10th with this cast and a new cast every 2 weeks, start through January 30th at DR2. We'll link to that in our email.
And I went to see comedian Abby Wambaugh at Dixon Place. Her show is called The First 3 Minutes of 17 Shows, where it literally is like 17 skits, and she does the first 3 minutes of 17 shows, maybe real, maybe made up. It's mildly amusing. Only one of the skits really made me laugh, and then the last one is kind of poignant. But that's at Dixon Place for the next two or three
maybe
weeks.
Maybe I'll do a show. I have a file from my college days. It's first pages of short stories I never finished.
Get your tickets now, people.
Well, I haven't looked at it in 50 years. So we'll see if there's anything in there.
I played Eeyore once in a high school production.
Yes?
Yes, it was a very sophisticated Winnie the Pooh.
In high school?
High school. Very sophisticated Winnie the Pooh play. And my job as Eeyore was to sit on the edge of the stage, eat thistles, and complain. And everybody called it typecasting.
Well,
nothing has changed since
as
then.
As long as we're exchanging theater credits. In college, I did Happy Birthday, Wanda June by Kurt Vonnegut. I played the lead, which is Harold Ryan, who was a hunter. And I was at the end of the season, I was given the Ernest Hemingway Macho Award. It was a joke, but that's what they gave me.
Well, when I was in seventh grade, before Eeyore, I played the king in the William Thackeray Rose and the Ring.
Okay.
An old play. And afterwards, it was a year-ending production, and I go home and I call my best friend because I'm now allowed to tell people that we're leaving and moving to Denver. And she's shocked, and she turns around and tells her mother this news, and her mother says, "After that performance, I wouldn't believe a word she says."
Well, and what was...
Because I was so good at deceiving everyone.
Would that be allowed today? We're,
in a girl's school,
girl,
yes.
Taking a boy's role?
In a girl's school, yes.
When I went to a boys' high school, I mean, I wasn't in any shows, but they would import girls from the girls' schools to play the girls' roles. All right. Elon Musk reposted content criticizing transgender identity scenes in Netflix's children's programs like The Babysitter's Club and Dead End Paranormal Park. And this is Elon Musk then calling on subscribers, cancel for their children's sake. Now, that has a big impact on Netflix and a lot of people.
You trimmed your mustache.
Well, I try to keep it a little bit trimmed. And, you know.
But speaking of Netflix, something actually I think is going to be, I hope it's really good. Boots this week starts on Netflix. It's a series. It's about a closeted gay Marine in 1990. It's a true story. It's based on a book and getting a lot of attention and acclaim. I think this is something you may want to pay attention to. Boots on Netflix. And then a little lighter. did you watch the Beckham series on Netflix about David Beckham?
No.
Neither did I, but I may have to go back and watch it. Because now they're airing a series on Victoria Beckham.
Yes.
Then maybe the kids.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
All right, that's one of the kids.
Yeah.
If you're headed to London, the National Theatre's production of Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest, which I saw last year and loved, it's transferred to the Noel Coward Theatre in the West End with a new cast led by Ali Alexander of It's a Sin as Algernon, and critics are saying that Stephen Fry, we have a picture of him was born to play Lady Bracknell, as he does here until the 10th of January. He's always wanted to play the role. He's getting the chance now. It's a very camp role, and it's, you know, you have to do it very seriously for the show to work.
I did the King very seriously.
I saw it with Sharon D. Clarke, and they did it West Indian style, and it was hilarious. But again, it's got to be a very reserved role.
Okay.
And if you can't see that, go for the movie with Dame Edith Evans.
And right here in New York City, you can go to the Metropolitan Museum and see their exhibition, Superfine, Tailoring Black Style. Their Costume Institute show earlier this year was about black style. And I'm guessing this may be an offshoot of that. But included in it is Stormy DeLavery, who was famous for being one of the Stonewall participants and a very important activist in the
community. Basically described as a drag king?
Yes, I think that would be appropriate. Did a lot of performing as a drag king. Had a show that she took around everywhere.
Yeah, and you can also, of course, you can also go to the New York Public Library. They have on the first floor an exhibit called Treasures, and they rotate things. It's a big exhibit. It's very eclectic. It's all kinds of issues, but they have lots of LGBTQ stuff there and include pictures of Stormy.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have a minute and a half. You got anything on your mind?
Anything on my mind? How we're going to survive. I mean, it was helpful to talk to Sarah.
Yes.
She really has been through a lot. If you read the book, the kinds of things she was subjected to, but she doesn't panic. She very calmly answers the questions of the inquisitors who were going after her jobs and say, she doesn't get agitated. She just,
Well, she's always been very thoughtful and has developed a moral code over the years. So I think that helps her not be so reactive and instead to be calm in those situations. And what I referred to earlier is she and Jim Hubbard decided to create this ACT UP Oral History Project years ago, and they convened a meeting of maybe 40 or 50 of us who had been in ACT UP and put out their proposal. We're going to do oral histories. We're going to interview everyone. We're going to put this on a website. And my reaction was, who cares? Sometimes I'm a little short-sighted.
But it's a valuable resource now.
It's wonderful. It is wonderful, and people have been using it ever since. And it's really in-depth interviews with 180 former members of ACT UP New York, and it tells all the stories. And people sometimes have competing memories.
And they also made the movie United in Anger, which we're thinking of running at the end of the year when we can't be here in the studio.
So stay tuned for that. And for us returning next week, thank you.